Most people think calm is a personality trait, like you're either born chill or you're not. But if you've lived long enough, you already know that's not true. Calm is a skill. And like any skill, it has a cost. You pay attention, you practice, you fail a few times, you learn. And one day, you realize you're no longer as easy to pull into chaos. Because the world is full of triggers. A disrespectful comment. A slow driver. A co-worker who loves drama. A family member who knows exactly which button to press. A random message that ruins your mood for 3 hours. And if you're not careful, you end up living as a reaction machine. Someone else touches a switch and your nervous system lights up. Stoicism is basically a refusal to live like that. Not in a cold way, in a dignified way. The Stoics weren't trying to become emotionless statues. They were trying to become free. Free from being controlled by what people say, what people think, what happens on the outside, and even what happens inside, those sudden waves of anger, insecurity, impatience, and fear. And what I love about Stoicism is that it doesn't require a perfect life to work. It was built in the middle of real pressure. Epictetus was born into slavery. Seneca lived with political danger over his head. Marcus Aurelius carried the weight of an empire while dealing with sickness, betrayal, war, and loss. They weren't writing from a peaceful vacation. They were writing from the arena. So if you've ever said to yourself, "I want to stay calm, but people are too much," or "I try to be unbothered, but life keeps testing me," this episode is for you. We're going to walk through 15 Stoic principles that train your calm like a muscle. So you don't just stay calm when things are easy, but especially when things aren't. And I want to make one thing clear before we start. Calm is not letting people walk over you. Calm is not avoidance. Calm is not pretending you don't care. Calm is power with control. It's being able to choose your response instead of being hijacked by impulse. So here's your simple mental cue for today, just to set the tone. The next time something tries to provoke you, anything, ask yourself one quiet question. Is this worth my inner peace? And if the answer is no, let that be the moment you practice freedom. 1. Understand what is and isn't in your control. If you want a calm mind, you need a clear border. Because a huge percentage of anxiety, anger, and frustration comes from one mistake: trying to control what was never yours to control. That sounds obvious, but watch how your day actually works. You wake up and your mind immediately grabs things that are outside your control: how people will act, how fast results will come, whether someone will respect you, whether the world will be fair, whether traffic will be smooth, whether your plan will go perfectly. And the second you try to own those things emotionally, your peace becomes fragile. Now you're living on a hostage situation. Reality has to cooperate for you to feel okay. Epictetus built an entire philosophy around this one line: some things are up to you and some things are not. That's not a motivational quote, that's a map. And if you follow that map daily, you become harder to disturb because you stop wasting your emotional energy on the uncontrollable. Here's what is in your control: your choices, your effort, your discipline, your values, your reactions, the meaning you assign to events, the boundaries you set, the way you speak, the way you breathe when you feel triggered, the way you walk away when it's not worth it. Here's what isn't: other people's opinions, other people's moods, other people's respect, the past, most outcomes, timing, luck, weather, traffic, social media noise, and the fact that life is sometimes unfair. Now, the reason this principle creates calm is not because it makes the world easier. It's because it makes your job simple. When you know what's in your control, you know where to place your attention. You stop spreading your mind across 100 worries like a thin layer of stress. and you return it to the one place where power actually lives, your response. Marcus Aurelius wrote to himself like this constantly. He reminded himself that the world will do what it does, people will act like people, bodies will age, plans will fail, and death exists. And instead of turning that into despair, he turned it into focus. Because if those things are true, then your best move is to control your own mind. That's where freedom is. Let me make it feel real with a normal situation. Someone disrespects you. The impulse is to control their behavior, make them see your value, make them apologize, make them understand. But you can't control that. What you can control is your standard, your boundary, your composure, your decision to not beg for respect, your decision to respond with clarity or to walk away. That shift alone can keep your dignity intact. Or think about a setback. Most people react by panicking about the outcome. Now everything is ruined, but the outcome was never fully in your hands. What is in your hands is your next action, your ability to adjust, your willingness to continue, your patience with the process. Calm comes back when you stop trying to control the whole future and focus on the next right move. This is why Stoicism works. It doesn't ask you to control life. It asks you to control your mind inside life. So here's a practice you can actually use today. When you feel yourself getting pulled into frustration, pause and label the problem with one sentence. Is this in my control? If the answer is no, release it. Not emotionally overnight, but mentally in that moment. Then ask, what is in my control right now? And put all your energy there. One action, one decision, one calm response. That's how calm becomes a habit. And here's the question to sit with before we move on. What is one thing you've been carrying emotionally that has never been in your control? And what would change if you dropped it today? 2. Detach your emotions from external events. Have you ever noticed how one small event can steal an entire day from you? A tone in someone's voice, a rude comment, a plan changing at the last second, a message left on scene, something minor happens outside you, and then something major happens inside you. Your chest tightens, your mind starts arguing, your mood shifts, and suddenly you're living in a different world. This is one of the deepest Stoic skills. Learning to separate the event from the emotional storm you attach to it. Because the event is usually simple. Someone said something. Something broke. Something didn't go your way. That's it. The rest, the anger, the humiliation, the anxiety, the obsession is the story your mind creates around it. Epictetus said it in a way that's almost too clean. It's not things that disturb us, it's our judgments about things. People hear that and think it means you should just think positive. That's not Stoicism. Stoicism is not denial. It's precision. It's recognizing that between what happens and how you feel, there is an interpretation happening. And if you can see the interpretation, you can change your relationship with the moment. Jung, in a different language, would call it projection. The Stoics call it judgment. But it's the same human pattern. We don't just experience reality. We add meaning to it. And most of our suffering comes from the meaning we add. So what does it mean to detach your emotions from external events? It doesn't mean you become numb. It means you stop giving the outside world direct access to your inner world. You stop letting random moments decide your internal weather. Imagine the mind like a house. Events happen outside your house all day. Noise, traffic, weather, people shouting. If your windows are always open, your house is never calm. Detachment is closing the windows. You can still hear what's happening, but it doesn't invade you. Marcus Aurelius trained this in himself constantly. He'd remind himself that the world is full of people acting out their nature, some wise, some foolish, some kind, some selfish, and that his job wasn't to demand perfection from them. His job was to meet reality with reason and character. That's emotional detachment, not expecting the world to babysit your peace. Now let's make it practical in everyday terms, because this is where most people fail. Someone cuts you off in traffic. The event lasts 2 seconds, but the emotion can last 30 minutes. Why? Because your mind turns it into a personal insult. How dare they? You start imagining their character, their intention, their disrespect. But you don't actually know anything. The event was just a car moving into your lane. Detachment means you refuse to build a story that steals your energy. Or someone criticizes you. The event is a sentence, but your mind turns it into a trial. They don't respect me. Everyone thinks I'm not enough. I need to prove myself. Detachment doesn't mean you ignore feedback. It means you separate useful information from ego pain. You take what helps you grow and you drop the rest. Here's the truth most people don't like. Your emotional suffering often comes from the demand that reality must be different for you to be okay. Detachment is you removing that demand, and there's a powerful kind of freedom inside that. Because once you detach, you can respond intelligently. You can make decisions without being hijacked by mood. You can protect your dignity. You can stay calm, even when others are chaotic. And that calm is not passive, it's dominant. A calm person in a storm has the advantage because they can see clearly while everyone else is blinded by emotion. So how do you train this? You practice naming the event without the story. Instead of, "they disrespected me," you say, "they spoke in a harsh tone." Instead of, "my day is ruined," you say, "this plan changed." Instead of, "nothing ever works for me," you say, "this attempt didn't work." You're not lying. You're cleaning up the language. You're removing the drama that the ego loves. And once you remove the drama, the emotion loses fuel. Then you add a second step. You choose your response based on your values, not your feelings. That choice is where calm becomes real. Feelings can rise. That's human. But you don't have to follow them like orders. You can notice anger without becoming angry. You can notice anxiety without obeying it. You can notice insecurity without feeding it. Seneca wrote about how quickly the mind can spiral if you don't catch it early, how anger grows because we keep feeding it with thoughts. Detachment is catching it early. It's refusing to feed it. So here's a daily practice you can use starting today. When something triggers you, pause and ask, "What is the event and what is my story about it?" Then ask, "If I drop the story, what remains?" Usually what remains is manageable. Usually it's smaller than you thought. And then you decide, "What would a calm, disciplined version of me do next?" Do that, even if your emotions are still loud. That's the muscle. Here's the question to sit with before we move on. What external event triggers you the fastest? And what story do you instantly attach to it that turns it into suffering? 3. Master your inner dialogue. Most people think their biggest problem is the world outside them, the rude people, the pressure, the unfair timing, the chaos. But if you sit with your own mind for long enough, you start realizing something uncomfortable and also empowering. The loudest disturbance usually isn't out there. It's the voice inside your head narrating everything like a courtroom drama. That voice can turn a small inconvenience into a personal insult. It can turn a mistake into a life sentence. It can turn a quiet moment into a spiral. And if you don't learn to lead that inner dialogue, you'll always feel like calm is something you lose when life gets intense, because your mind will keep lighting fires faster than you can put them out. The Stoics were extremely practical about this. They didn't treat thoughts like sacred truth. They treated them like impressions, first drafts of reality. Epictetus said you don't have to accept every impression that shows up. You can examine it. You can challenge it. You can refuse it. That idea alone is like taking your hand off a hot stove. Because most people don't examine their inner dialogue, they obey it. Here's how it usually goes. Something happens, someone ignores you, plans change, you make a small mistake, and your mind instantly starts talking. That's disrespect. You're falling behind. This always happens to you. You're not good enough. You need to prove yourself, and it sounds like you, but it's not you. It's a pattern, it's a reflex, it's an old script. Marcus Aurelius wrote his meditations as if he was coaching himself in real time, because he understood the mind can become your worst enemy if you leave it unmanaged. He didn't say, "I'll fix the world." He said, in effect, "I'll train my mind to meet the world." That's mastery of inner dialogue. You become the leader inside your own head. Now, this doesn't mean you try to think positive all day. That can become another kind of forcing. Stoicism is calmer than that. It's more like mental hygiene. You stop letting dirty thoughts sit there all day, contaminating everything. So what does a dirty inner dialogue look like? It's catastrophic language. This ruins everything. It's identity attacks. I'm stupid. I'm weak. I never change. It's mind reading. They think I'm a joke. It's time travel. I'll never recover. It's ego narratives. I have to win this. None of those are facts. They're interpretations. And interpretations can be replaced. A clean inner dialogue is simpler. It doesn't insult you. It doesn't exaggerate. It doesn't turn every moment into a story about your worth. It sounds more like, "This is frustrating. That was a mistake. I can handle this. What's the next step?" Let's respond with dignity. The difference isn't that the clean voice is happy. The difference is that it's useful. Seneca warned about how we suffer more in imagination than in reality. He wasn't saying imagination is bad. He was saying imagination becomes a weapon when it runs wild. Your inner dialogue is the handle of that weapon. If you grip it the wrong way, you cut yourself. Here's a simple scene that makes it obvious. Two people receive the same criticism. One hears it, and their inner dialogue says, "They're attacking me. I'm not respected. I need to defend myself." They react. They escalate. Their day is gone. The other hears it, and their inner dialogue says, "Is there anything useful here? If yes, I'll adjust. If not, I'll let it pass." Same event. Different inner voice, completely different life. This is why mastering inner dialogue is one of the most powerful ways to never lose your calm. Because when your mind speaks with discipline, your emotions settle faster. You stop feeding the storm. So how do you train it without making it robotic? Start by catching the first sentence. That's the one that sets the direction. When something happens, your mind's first line usually appears instantly. You can't always control that first line showing up, but you can control the second line. You can answer it. If your mind says, "This is unbearable," you answer, "It's uncomfortable, not unbearable." If it says, "They disrespected me," you answer, "Maybe, maybe not. I'll choose my response." If it says, "I'm falling behind," you answer, "I'm here now. I'll take the next step." That's not fake positivity. That's leadership. Over time, that second line becomes your default. And then something wild happens. You start experiencing fewer emotional explosions, not because life got easier, but because your inner voice stopped throwing gasoline on every spark. Here's the question to sit with before we move on. When you lose your calm, what does your inner voice usually say first? And what would change if your second sentence was disciplined? 4. Accept reality as it is, not as you wish it to be. A lot of losing your calm is really just losing a fight with reality. Not a fight with a person, not a fight with a situation, a fight with the fact that something is happening that you don't like, and the mind's first impulse is to argue with it. This shouldn't be happening. They shouldn't be like this. It should be easier by now. I shouldn't feel this way. Life shouldn't be unfair. That should is where calm goes to die. The Stoics understood something brutal and freeing. Reality does not negotiate. It doesn't care what you prefer. It doesn't adjust itself to your expectations. It simply is. And when you accept that, you stop wasting emotional energy resisting what already exists. Marcus Aurelius had a phrase that hits hard when you actually live it. Accept whatever comes woven in the pattern of your destiny. He wasn't saying, love everything that happens. He was saying, stop acting surprised that life is life. Because surprise is what turns problems into emotional crises. Acceptance is the opposite of surprise, and it's also the opposite of passivity. This is important. Accepting reality does not mean you do nothing. It means you start from truth. You stop arguing with the starting point. You stop pretending the facts should be different. You stop demanding that people be wiser, kinder, more rational than they are. You start from what is real, and then you act. That's why acceptance creates calm. Calm comes from clarity. Clarity comes from truth. Here's the simplest example. Something breaks. Your plans collapse. You miss an opportunity. You get delayed. Someone lets you down. If you accept reality, you say, okay, this is what happened. Now what? Your mind stays forward. You conserve energy. You solve. But if you don't accept reality, your mind begins to protest. Why me? This is unfair. This shouldn't happen. They ruined everything. That protest feels natural, but it's expensive. It burns your mental fuel. It makes you reactive. It pulls you into anger or self-pity. And while you're protesting, the problem still exists. Reality is still there, waiting. Seneca had this idea that suffering is often pain plus judgment. Pain might be unavoidable. Judgment is optional. Acceptance is you removing the extra layer. You're not denying pain, you're refusing to multiply it. Now, this principle is especially powerful in dealing with people because people are the easiest place to lose your calm. A person is selfish. A person is immature. A person is disrespectful, and your mind says they should know better. Sometimes they should, but they don't. And the more you demand that they become a different person so you can have peace, the more you hand them control over your emotional state. Stoicism says, accept people as they are, and then choose your distance, your boundaries, your response. That's acceptance. Because peace doesn't come from forcing reality to match your wishes. It comes from adjusting yourself to what is true. There's also a deeper layer, accepting reality inside yourself. Your emotions, your flaws, your limitations, your current season. Many people lose their calm because they're fighting their own inner experience. They feel anxious and they say, I shouldn't feel anxious. They feel sad and they say, I shouldn't feel sad. They feel tired and they say, I shouldn't be tired. That inner resistance creates a second wave of suffering. Acceptance says, this is what I'm feeling, it's okay. Now, what's the wise next step? That question, now what, is a stoic superpower. It keeps you out of drama. It keeps you out of victimhood. It keeps you moving with dignity. So here's how you train this without becoming passive. When something happens that you don't like, do a quick mental reset. This is the reality. I can either argue with it or work with it. Then choose one action that works with it. Even if it's small, even if it's just taking a breath before you respond, even if it's just stepping away for a minute, you're training your mind to start from truth, not from complaint. Because the calm person isn't the one who gets everything they want. It's the one who stops demanding that life bend to their preferences. Here's the question to sit with before we move on. What is one reality in your life right now that you keep arguing with? And how much calmer would you be if you accepted it and focused on the next move? 5. Choose reason over reaction. There's a tiny moment, almost invisible, right before you lose your calm. It's that split second where you feel the heat rise, your chest tightens, your jaw clenches, your mind speeds up. And in that moment, your body is basically making a proposal. React now. Protect yourself. Win this. Say the thing. Prove the point. Most people accept that proposal immediately. They don't even realize they're accepting it. The reaction just happens, and then they spend the next hour cleaning up the mess, apologizing, regretting, replaying, wondering why they lost it. Stoicism is the art of not accepting that proposal. Reason doesn't mean you become cold or robotic. Reason means you choose what serves your long-term dignity over what satisfies your short-term emotion. It means you don't let a temporary feeling write a permanent sentence. Seneca, who wrote one of the most powerful works on anger, basically treated anger like a mental illness that spreads if you feed it. He knew the danger of reaction. He knew that once the mind is inflamed, it stops seeing clearly. And when you stop seeing clearly, you start making decisions that you wouldn't make if you were calm. That's why this principle is so crucial. Calm is not the absence of emotion. Calm is emotion under leadership. And leadership is reason. Marcus Aurelius had this steady, almost ruthless clarity with himself. He'd remind himself that people act out of ignorance, that life is short, that arguing is often pointless, that your character matters more than your ego. He wasn't suppressing emotion, he was putting it in its proper place. He was saying, "I feel it, but I don't have to become it." Now let's make this real in the situations where you actually lose your calm, disrespect, criticism, conflict, delays, being misunderstood. When someone disrespects you, reaction says, destroy them with words, put them in their place. Reason says, what response protects my dignity? Sometimes that's calm firmness. Sometimes that's silence. Sometimes that's walking away. But it's chosen, not impulsive. When someone criticizes you, reaction says, defend yourself immediately, make them wrong. Reason says, is there truth here? If yes, I'll use it. If not, I won't carry it. Reason is quieter but stronger. When plans fall apart, reaction says, this ruins everything. Reason says, this is inconvenient. I can adapt. One creates chaos, one creates calm. Here's the hard truth. Reaction is easy because it feels like power. You feel alive when you react. You feel dominant. You feel like you're not letting it slide. But what you're actually doing is giving your power away to the trigger. You're letting the outside world control the inside world. Reason is harder because it asks you to tolerate discomfort without exploding. It asks you to sit with the heat and not obey it. But that's what real power is. If you can sit with heat and choose your response, you're free. And freedom is the goal. There's a simple Stoic idea that ties this together. You always have a choice. Maybe not a choice about what happens, but a choice about how you meet it. The gap between stimulus and response is where your entire life lives. People talk about calm like it's a mood. Stoicism says calm is a decision made inside that gap. So how do you train this decision? You train it the same way you train anything, by making the right choice when it's small so you can make it when it's big. Start with minor annoyances, the slow line, the small inconvenience, the mild disrespect, that moment when you want to roll your eyes, clap back, or get sarcastic. Instead, practice reason. Breathe once, relax your jaw, and respond slower than your impulse wants to. It sounds almost too simple, but it's not simple when you do it consistently. It rewires you. It teaches your nervous system that you don't need to react to be safe. And when the big triggers come, the real disrespect, the real conflict, you'll have a trained habit to lean on. Here's a practice for today. When you feel the urge to react, delay your response by 5 seconds, just 5. In those 5 seconds, ask one question. What does the best version of me do here? Then do that. Not what feels good. What is good? Because the calm person isn't calm because life is gentle. They're calm because they've trained themselves to choose reason over reaction. Here's the question to hold before we move on. What trigger makes you react the fastest? And what would change if you inserted 5 seconds of reason before you respond? 6. Do not take anything personally. If you can master this one, your calm becomes almost unfair. Because taking things personally is like letting other people live inside your mind rent-free. One comment can replay for hours, one look can ruin your mood, one disagreement can feel like rejection. And suddenly your emotional state is no longer yours, it belongs to whoever touched your ego. Stoicism says, stop giving people that kind of access. Now, don't take it personally sounds like something people say when they want you to ignore real disrespect. That's not what I mean. I'm not telling you to accept bad behavior. I'm telling you to see the source of most behavior clearly, so you don't let it contaminate your inner world. Marcus Aurelius wrote about this in a very blunt way. When someone does wrong, it's often out of ignorance. They don't know better, or they're controlled by impulses, or they're trapped in their own patterns. That doesn't excuse them. It just explains something important. Their behavior is about them, not you. And when you truly understand that, you stop interpreting every moment as a verdict on your worth. Think about how many people walk around carrying invisible battles, insecurity, stress, shame, ego, childhood wounds, financial pressure, relationship chaos, health problems, a constant need to feel superior, a constant fear of being exposed. Most people are not calmly choosing their behavior, they're reacting to their inner world. So when someone is rude, it's often not a precise evaluation of you, it's a leak from their own internal mess. If you take that leak personally, you're basically drinking poison because someone else spilled it. Epictetus would tell you, what other people do is not yours. Your job is your response, your character, your standard, your boundary. And once you anchor yourself there, you become almost impossible to disturb. Let's make it feel real. Someone dismisses your idea. Your mind wants to take it personally. They don't respect me. But pause. Maybe they're insecure. Maybe they're tired. Maybe they're arrogant. Maybe they're distracted. Maybe they genuinely disagree. You don't know. So why would you instantly turn it into a story about your worth? Or someone doesn't reply to your message. Your mind wants to take it personally. They're ignoring me. But again, you don't know. They could be busy, overwhelmed, anxious, careless, or just not that interested. Their behavior may have nothing to do with your value, and even if it does reflect their interest, that still doesn't define your worth. Taking things personally is a form of mental arrogance in a weird way. It assumes that everything people do is about you. Stoicism humbles that. It says, you are not the center of everyone's world. People are acting out their own stories. Now, here's the deeper layer. Even praise shouldn't be taken too personally. Because if insults can destroy you, praise can control you. If your identity depends on being admired, then the absence of admiration will feel like death. Stoicism aims for inner stability. You do what's right because it's right, not because people clap and not because people criticize. Seneca warned about living for the crowd. He understood that once you hand your peace to public opinion, you're never free. Today, that crowd isn't only the street. It's the internet, the workplace, the family group chat, the social circle. The principle still holds. If you take everything personally, you become emotionally dependent. So what's the alternative? You build an internal reference point. Instead of asking, how do they see me? You ask, how am I living? Instead of asking, did they respect me? You ask, did I respect myself? Instead of asking, did I win this moment? You ask, did I act with dignity? That shift changes everything. Because once your identity is rooted in your character, not in other people's moods, your calm becomes durable. And this doesn't mean you become naive. You can still set boundaries. You can still walk away. You can still call things out. But you do it without emotional collapse. You do it from steadiness. Here's a daily practice that works immediately. When something triggers you, say one sentence in your head, "This is about them, not me." Then add one more sentence, "My job is my response." It sounds simple, but it creates space. It pulls you out of ego. It puts you back in control. And here's the question to sit with before we move on. What's one thing you keep taking personally? And what would your life feel like if you stopped letting that thing define your inner state? 7. Practice emotional detachment. There's a difference between caring and clinging. Most people don't realize when they cross the line. They start with a normal human desire. Respect, love, progress, recognition, a smooth day. And then the desire quietly becomes attachment. Now they don't just want it, they need it. They don't just prefer it, they depend on it. And the moment you depend on an external thing to feel okay, your calm becomes negotiable. Someone else can bargain with it. Life can steal it. A random event can break it. Emotional detachment is how you stop living like that. And again, stoicism isn't asking you to become cold. It's asking you to become free, free to care without being controlled by what you care about. Epictetus had a clean way of framing it. Don't attach your peace to things you can lose, because if you attach your peace to what can be taken, then you've volunteered to be disturbed. That's not fate attacking you, that's you placing your nervous system on a fragile foundation. So what does emotional detachment look like in real life? It looks like loving someone deeply, but not needing them to validate you. It looks like working hard without tying your self-worth to the outcome. It looks like receiving criticism without collapsing. It looks like hearing disrespect without needing to win an argument to feel strong. It looks like having ambition without desperation. Detachment is basically the ability to stay steady while life moves. Marcus Aurelius trained this as an emperor because he had to. Imagine being surrounded by people who wanted things from you, lied to you, flattered you, betrayed you, begged you, pressured you. If your emotions were attached to every opinion, every rumor, every reaction, he would have been destroyed. So he kept returning to the idea that the inner citadel is yours. Nobody enters without permission. That image is powerful, an inner citadel, a place inside you that stays standing no matter what happens outside. Emotional detachment is building that place. Now, the hardest part of this principle is that the mind confuses detachment with not caring. But detachment isn't lack of care, it's lack of dependence. You can care fully while keeping your center. In fact, detachment often makes you more effective because you stop reacting emotionally and start acting wisely. Think about conflict. When you're attached to being right, you argue like your life depends on it. You interrupt, you escalate, you become sharp, you become defensive. Your goal becomes victory. That attachment steals your calm. But when you detach, you can listen. You can respond slowly. You can choose whether the conversation is worth it. You can speak firmly without anger. You can end it without needing the last word. That's not weakness, that's power. Or think about relationships. When you're attached to someone's approval, you start acting in ways that betray you. You over-explain. You overgive. You tolerate disrespect. You shapeshift. Not because you're bad, but because you're afraid of losing them. Detachment is you saying, "I care, but I won't abandon myself." That one sentence can save your life. Seneca spoke a lot about how we suffer not from what happens, but from what we fear might happen. Attachment fuels that fear. When you're attached, you're constantly scanning, "What if I lose this? What if they leave? What if I fail? What if I'm not respected?" That scanning creates chronic anxiety. Detachment ends the scanning because it reminds you you can lose things and still remain whole. That's the real goal, wholeness. So how do you train emotional detachment without becoming numb? You practice holding things lightly. You show up, you care, you do your best, and then you release the outcome. You don't beg reality to cooperate. You don't cling to how things should go. You don't turn every event into a personal crisis. You stay in your lane, your effort, your character, your next move. Here's a practical way to do it in the moment. When you feel yourself getting emotionally hooked, when you feel the tightness, the obsession, the need to control, ask, "What am I attached to right now?" Then ask, "If I let go of that attachment, what would I do differently in the next 60 seconds?" Usually the answer is calmer, cleaner, more dignified. You might speak less, you might breathe first, you might walk away, you might respond tomorrow, you might stop trying to win and start trying to be wise. Emotional detachment is not a philosophy you memorize. It's a behavior you practice in small moments until it becomes your default. And here's the question to sit with before we move on. What do you cling to emotionally that keeps stealing your peace? And what would it feel like to care without needing it? 8. Respond with calm, not impulse. There's a reason calm feels rare right now. We live in a world that rewards instant reaction. Someone says something and you're expected to clap back. A headline drops and you're expected to outrage share it. A message comes in and you're expected to answer immediately. A mistake happens and you're expected to panic fast. Impulse has become the default rhythm of modern life. Stoicism is you choosing a different rhythm on purpose, because the calm response is not natural at first. The impulse is natural. The calm response is trained. And once it's trained, it becomes one of the most powerful advantages you can have, especially with people. When you respond with calm, you control the temperature of the room. You become the person who doesn't get pulled into chaos. You become the one who can think while others are emotionally blind. That's not just inner peace. That's social power. Marcus Aurelius had to practice this constantly. As emperor, every day he faced provocation, complaints, betrayals, manipulation, disrespect disguised as flattery. If he reacted impulsively, he would have been a puppet. So he trained himself to pause and respond from principle, not mood. That's what made him strong. Not that he had no emotion, but that he didn't let emotion drive the chariot. Epictetus said something that's quietly intense. When you're provoked, remember that it is your own judgment that provokes you. That doesn't mean the other person is innocent. It means your peace depends on your inner leadership. And inner leadership shows up most clearly in the moment of provocation. Now, let's make this very real. Think about the last time you snapped. It probably wasn't a big planned decision. It was a moment, a tone, a look, a small trigger, and the impulse rose like a wave and you surfed it without thinking. Then later, you felt that familiar regret. Why did I give that so much energy? That regret is proof that your impulse is not your true self. It's a reflex. So the goal is simple. Stop letting reflexes represent you. A calm response doesn't mean you let things slide. It means you choose the correct intensity. Sometimes the correct intensity is silence. Sometimes it's a firm boundary. Sometimes it's a clean sentence, and then you leave. Sometimes it's confronting someone, but it's chosen. You don't explode. You don't leak. You don't act like you're not in control. Seneca warned that anger begins as a spark and becomes a blaze if you give it oxygen. Impulse is oxygen. Calm is you starving the blaze before it grows. And the earlier you catch it, the easier it is. That's the key. You're not trying to calm down after you explode. You're training yourself to slow down before the explosion. Here's the shift that changes everything. Instead of asking, "How do I stop feeling this?" ask, What response would make me proud of myself an hour from now? Because impulse feels good for 5 seconds. Calm feels good for 5 years. Impulse gives you quick relief. Calm protects your reputation, your relationships, your self-respect. Calm keeps your life clean, and when your life is clean, your mind becomes calmer automatically. Now, how do you actually build this? You train 2 habits, slower timing and fewer words. Slower timing means you don't answer instantly when you're triggered. You give yourself a beat. You let the first wave pass. You breathe. You let your mind come back online. That beat is tiny, but it's everything. Fewer words means you don't try to win with a speech. A calm person doesn't over-explain in the heat of emotion. They say what needs to be said, and they stop. They don't give their peace away by arguing for 10 minutes with someone who's committed to misunderstanding. And here's a very practical trick that works immediately. When you feel triggered, relax your face, relax your jaw, lower your shoulders. Your body leads your mind. When your body stays relaxed, your mind finds it harder to panic. Marcus Aurelius would have understood this intuitively. Your posture is a signal to your nervous system. Then choose your response like a craftsman, not like a fighter. A craftsman doesn't swing wildly. He makes one clean cut. So in the next situation where someone tries to pull you into emotion, try this. Pause, breathe once and ask, what's the cleanest response? Then do that. Even if your impulse wants to do more, because calm isn't passive. Calm is controlled strength. Here's the question to sit with before we move on. When you lose your calm, what is your most common impulse? And what would happen to your life if you practiced one clean pause before you respond? 9. Lower expectations to reduce frustration. A lot of frustration is not caused by what happens. It's caused by what you expected to happen. You expected people to be considerate. You expected timing to be fair. You expected effort to guarantee results. You expected the message to be understood the way you meant it. You expected loyalty. You expected gratitude. You expected life to match your internal script. And when reality doesn't match the script, your mind reacts like it's been betrayed. That's why this principle matters so much for calm. Lowering expectations doesn't mean lowering standards. It means removing entitlement. It means you stop assuming the world will behave the way your ego prefers. Marcus Aurelius wrote about waking up each day expecting to meet difficult people. People who are selfish, rude, dishonest, jealous, careless. Not because he was cynical, but because he wanted to be prepared. When you expect perfection, you're shocked by normal human flaws. When you expect human nature, you stay calm. You keep your clarity. You don't lose your emotional balance every time someone acts like a human being. Here's the difference in a single line. Pessimism says nothing will work. Stoicism says things will be challenging, so I'll be ready. That's not negative. That's mature. Now, a lot of people hear lower expectations and think it means accepting bad treatment. No. Standards are what you demand from yourself. Expectations are what you demand from life. Stoicism keeps standards high and expectations realistic. You can have high standards for your behavior, discipline, integrity, patience, while having realistic expectations about other people and external outcomes. That combination is what creates calm, because you stop being emotionally surprised all the time. Think about how often anger is really surprise. I can't believe they did that. But why can't you believe it? People do disappointing things every day. The surprise is what makes it sting. Lower expectations removes the surprise, and without surprise, a lot of triggers lose their power. This is especially true with people you know well, family, co-workers, friends. The same person shows you who they are, and you keep expecting them to become a different person. Then you get hurt again and again, not because they changed, but because you refuse to accept what was already clear. Lower expectations is you saying, I see who you are, I won't hate you for it, but I also won't build my peace on the fantasy that you'll suddenly become someone else. That's calm. That's wisdom. Seneca warned about placing your happiness in the hands of others. Because if your happiness depends on other people meeting your expectations, you've chosen a fragile life. Someone will always disappoint you, sometimes intentionally, sometimes accidentally. Detachment and lowered expectations protect you from that fragility. Now, let's bring this into daily life in a practical way. If you expect traffic to be smooth every day, you'll start the day annoyed. If you expect delay, you'll leave earlier and stay calmer. If you expect everyone to be fair, you'll be constantly outraged. If you expect unfairness to exist, you'll focus on what you can control, your actions, your boundaries, your strategy. If you expect people to always appreciate you, you'll feel bitter often. If you accept that appreciation is inconsistent, you'll do what's right without needing applause. Lower expectations isn't about becoming numb, it's about becoming stable. And this principle has a hidden benefit. It makes you kinder, because when you stop expecting people to be perfect, you stop reacting to their flaws like a personal attack. You can still set boundaries, but you'll stop living in constant resentment. So, how do you practice this without becoming passive? Start each day with one simple mental reset. People will be people. Life will be life. My job is my response. That's it. When the inevitable irritation shows up, you're not shocked, you're ready. You can respond with calm because you are not mentally living in a fantasy. And then take it one step further. Lower expectations, raise preparation. Instead of expecting the day to be easy, prepare your mind to be steady. Instead of expecting people to be respectful, prepare your boundaries. Instead of expecting things to go perfectly, prepare your adaptability. That's stoic calm in real time. Here's the question to sit with before we move on. Where do you keep getting frustrated because you expect people or life to behave differently than they consistently do? 10. Train yourself to pause before reacting. If there's one skill that quietly runs your whole emotional life, it's this. What happens in the pause? Because the pause is the space where you either stay free or you get hijacked. Most people don't choose to lose their calm. They just don't pause. A trigger hits, and they're already speaking, already typing, already defending, already escalating. It's automatic. And automatic reactions feel normal until you realize how expensive they are, how many relationships they damage, how much regret they create, how many hours of mental peace they steal. Stoicism treats the pause like a weapon, a calm, controlled weapon. Epictetus would tell you that impressions arrive fast, but your consent doesn't have to. You can slow down the moment. You can examine what's happening inside you before you act. That examination is the pause. And Marcus Aurelius practiced this in a very grounded way. He didn't try to block emotion from showing up. He tried to stop emotion from becoming action too quickly. He trained himself to see the impulse as a passing thing, not as a command. Because an impulse is not a prophecy, it's just a sensation. The pause is how you remember that. Now, I want to make this feel practical in your real life, not philosophical. The pause is the difference between responding to a disrespectful comment with a clean boundary or with a heated argument you regret. Correcting someone calmly or humiliating them and creating an enemy, taking a breath and thinking, or sending a message that makes the situation 10 times worse. Listening and understanding, or interrupting and turning it into a fight. Same trigger, different future. That's the pause. Seneca wrote about anger as something that grows when you give it speed. Anger loves speed. Speed makes everything feel urgent, and urgency makes you reckless. The pause breaks the speed. It makes you slower than the emotion. And when you're slower than the emotion, you can lead it instead of being dragged by it. So how do you build the pause? You don't build it in the middle of a huge conflict first. You build it in the small moments when the stakes are low, because the mind trains through repetition. Start with minor irritations, the slow line, the small mistake, the annoying message, the tiny insult. The moment you want to roll your eyes, sigh dramatically, get sarcastic, or snap, that's your training ground. In those moments, practice one simple move. Delay your response. Not forever, just enough to create a gap. Let your nervous system feel the trigger without acting on it. That's literally how you strengthen calm. And here's something that helps. The pause isn't only mental, it's physical. Slow your breathing by one notch. Relax your jaw, drop your shoulders, unclench your hands. When your body softens, your mind can think again. It's not spiritual, it's nervous system biology. Your body is giving your brain a signal. We are not in immediate danger. And when the brain believes that, reason comes back online. Now, what do you do inside the pause? You ask one clean question: what outcome do I want here? Not, what do I feel? Because feelings are loud and temporary. Not, how do I win? Because ego creates unnecessary wars. Ask, what outcome do I want? Respect, peace, clarity, a boundary. To end the interaction, to protect your reputation, to avoid regret. When you choose the outcome, your response becomes deliberate. And deliberate responses have a different power. They're calm, they're simple, they're hard to argue with. They don't leak emotion. They don't give people a handle to pull you around with. Also, the pause protects you from a very common trap, over-explaining. When people feel triggered, they start talking too much. They try to justify, prove, defend, persuade. They hand their peace over in the form of words. The pause interrupts that. It gives you a chance to say less and meaningfully. So here's a simple practice for today. The next time you feel even slightly triggered, don't respond immediately. Count slowly in your head. 1, 2, 3. Then respond. That's it. It sounds almost childish, but it works because it breaks the automatic chain. And over time, you'll notice something. Calm stops being something you try to have. It becomes your default. Not because you became perfect, but because you built a habit of pausing. Here's the question to sit with before we move on. What situation in your life would instantly improve if you practiced a 3-second pause before you respond? 11. View challenges as training. There's a simple reason some people stay calm under pressure and others collapse. The calm person isn't shocked by difficulty. They don't interpret resistance as a personal insult. They don't treat obstacles as proof that life is against them. They see challenges the way an athlete sees weight. Heavy, yes. Uncomfortable, yes. But also useful. Also shaping. Also building something. That mindset is pure stoicism. Marcus Aurelius had that famous idea. When something blocks your path, it becomes the path. Not because obstacles are fun, but because they're unavoidable. And once you accept that they're unavoidable, you can either complain about them or use them. Most people complain, and the complaint is what steals their calm. Because complaining is usually a demand, this shouldn't be happening. And the moment you demand that life be easy for you to feel okay, you become fragile. Calm disappears whenever life gets real. Stoicism flips it. It says, difficulty is normal, pressure is normal, people are imperfect, plans break, bodies get tired, timing is messy. That's the human condition. So instead of being offended by it, train with it. Here's the big shift. When you treat challenges as training, they stop feeling like threats. A threat makes you tense. Training makes you focused. A threat makes you emotional. Training makes you deliberate. A threat makes you reactive. Training makes you patient. That's why this principle is such a calm builder. It changes your emotional interpretation of adversity. And interpretation is everything. Seneca wrote a lot about how hardship reveals character. Not in a dramatic way, but in a daily way. Pressure shows you what you are relying on. Pressure shows you how disciplined your mind really is. Pressure shows you whether your calm is real or just a mood that exists when everything is comfortable. So when life gives you a challenge, an unfair situation, a rude person, a sudden setback, the stoic question becomes, what is this training in me right now? Maybe it's training patience. Maybe it's training self-control. Maybe it's training humility. Maybe it's training boundaries. Maybe it's training courage. Maybe it's training endurance. And the moment you ask that, you're no longer a victim of the moment. You're a student of it. Your mind moves from, why is this happening to me? To, what is this building in me? That switch alone can calm your nervous system. Now, this doesn't mean you should seek suffering or pretend to enjoy it. Stoicism isn't masochism, it's realism. It's understanding that suffering will show up whether you invite it or not, so you might as well make it useful. Think about the most common things that steal your calm. Delays, criticism, misunderstandings, rejection, disrespect, uncertainty. None of these are rare. They're guaranteed. So if they're guaranteed, it makes sense to treat them like training scenarios rather than emergencies. For example, when someone is disrespectful, you can treat it as training in composure and boundaries. You don't have to explode to prove strength. You can respond calmly, or you can walk away, and you can keep your dignity. That's training. When your plan fails, you can treat it as training in adaptability. Instead of panic, you adjust. Instead of drama, you replan. That's training. When life feels unfair, you can treat it as training in focusing only on what you can control. You stop wasting energy on bitterness, and you put it into your next move. That's training. Over time, this mindset builds something powerful, resilience without bitterness. A lot of people become resilient, but they become hard and angry. Stoicism offers a different path, resilient and calm, strong and steady, capable and peaceful. So how do you practice this daily? You start small. When something annoys you today, instead of reacting, label it internally. Training. Just that word. Quietly. Then choose the response that a stronger version of you would choose. Not the response that feels emotionally satisfying, but the one that builds character. Because character is what keeps you calm when life is chaotic. And here's the question to sit with before we move on. What challenge keeps testing you lately? And if you treated it as training, what skill would you deliberately build through it? 12. Let go of the need to be right. If you want to see how quickly calm disappears, watch what happens when someone challenges your opinion. Even if the topic is small, something in the ego gets activated. You feel the urge to correct them, to prove your point, to win the exchange, to get the last word. And it's funny, because we act like we're defending truth. But most of the time, we're defending identity. We're defending the feeling of being intelligent, competent, respected. That's why the need to be right is so dangerous. It turns conversations into battles, it turns disagreements into personal threats, and it makes you lose your calm over things that don't actually matter. Stoicism asks a very sharp question. What matters more, being right or being at peace? Marcus Aurelius had a line that hits like a cold shower. If someone can show you that you're wrong, be grateful because you've improved. That's not natural for most people. Most people feel insulted when corrected. The Stoic feels upgraded. Not because they enjoy humiliation, but because they value truth more than ego comfort. And truth requires humility. Seneca also warned about arguing as a habit. Not because discussion is bad, but because many people argue to dominate, not to understand. They want the feeling of winning. They want control. They want superiority. And once you're attached to that feeling, you will find reasons to fight everywhere. Your calm will always be on the edge, ready to break. Letting go of the need to be right is you stepping out of that trap. Now, this doesn't mean you become passive or agree with everything. It means you stop treating every disagreement as a threat to your worth. It means you don't make your peace depend on other people admitting you're correct. Because if your peace depends on that, you'll never be peaceful. People rarely admit they're wrong, even when they know, even when it's obvious. Their ego won't let them. So if you keep trying to force them, you're choosing frustration as a lifestyle. Epictetus would say, you don't control other people's opinions, you control your own character. So don't trade your character for the temporary pleasure of winning a pointless argument. There's also a hidden truth here. The need to be right is often fear of being seen as weak. Some men feel like if they don't correct everything, they'll be disrespected. If they don't argue, they'll be walked over. If they don't defend every point, they'll look small. But real strength doesn't need constant defense. Real strength can tolerate being misunderstood. Real strength can walk away from the unnecessary fight. Marcus Aurelius was the most powerful man in the world at the time, and he still reminded himself to be patient with ignorance, to let go of petty conflict, to keep his mind clean. That tells you something. If he didn't need to prove himself in every conversation, you don't either. Here's a simple scene. You're talking to someone and they say something wrong. Your impulse is to correct immediately, to teach, to show you know better. But ask yourself, what is the purpose? Is it necessary? Or is it just ego? If it's necessary, like safety, money, important decisions, then yes, be clear. Correct calmly. But if it's just a minor opinion, a small misunderstanding, a pointless debate, you can let it pass. You can preserve your peace. Because most arguments aren't about truth, they're about power. And if you refuse to play that game, you become calmer instantly. So how do you practice letting go of the need to be right? You practice saying less. You practice asking questions instead of making statements. You practice being curious, not combative. And you practice one powerful phrase internally. I don't need to win this. That phrase sounds simple, but it can change your whole emotional life. It releases you from the mental prison of needing the last word. It keeps your nervous system from escalating. It allows you to choose silence without feeling weak. Seneca would say that a calm mind chooses its battles, and most battles are not worth the cost. So here's the question to sit with before we move on. Where do you keep fighting to be right, and what would happen if you chose peace instead, just once today? 13. Accept people as they are. There's a specific kind of exhaustion that comes from wanting people to be different. You want them to be more mature, more consistent, more respectful, more self-aware. You want them to communicate better, to stop being petty, to stop being selfish, to finally understand you, and you keep carrying this invisible job in your mind. If I explain it the right way, if I react the right way, if I love them enough, if I prove myself enough, they'll change. That job will steal your calm for years. Stoicism offers a brutal kind of peace. Accept people as they are, and then choose how close they get to you. Marcus Aurelius wrote about this almost like a morning ritual. He reminded himself that he would meet people who are ungrateful, arrogant, dishonest, jealous, and irritable. Not because he hated people, but because he refused to be shocked by human nature. He understood that shock is the beginning of emotional chaos. When you expect people to be perfect, every flaw feels like betrayal. When you accept reality, you stay calm. Accepting people as they are doesn't mean you approve of them. It means you stop being surprised by them. And it means you stop negotiating with reality. Because here's the truth. Most people don't change because you want them to. They change when they're ready, when the pain of staying the same becomes bigger than the pain of growing. That's their journey, their timing, their responsibility. Your responsibility is your peace. Epictetus would say, Other people's behavior is not yours. Their opinions are not yours. Their choices are not yours. The moment you make their growth your mission, you give them control over your emotional state. Because now you're invested in an outcome you can't control. That investment becomes frustration, and frustration becomes anger, and anger becomes loss of calm. So the Stoic move is simple. See people clearly, accept what you see, then decide. Do you need a boundary? Do you need distance? Do you need to stop explaining? Do you need to stop expecting? Do you need to stop trusting them with things they've already proven they can't handle? Acceptance is the start of those decisions. And this is where a lot of people get stuck. They think acceptance means giving up on people, but it can actually be more compassionate than constant disappointment. Because when you accept someone's current nature, you stop forcing them to perform a version of themselves they don't have access to yet. You stop setting them up to fail, and you stop setting yourself up to be hurt. Seneca wrote about dealing with difficult people as if it were training. He believed the wise person doesn't demand that the world be filled with saints. The wise person becomes strong enough to meet flawed humanity without losing dignity. That doesn't mean you tolerate abuse. It means you don't waste your life trying to make an abusive person become kind. You protect yourself. You withdraw your energy. You keep your mind clean. Now here's the most practical part. Accepting people as they are protects you from emotional bargaining. Emotional bargaining is when you keep hoping, if I do this, they'll finally treat me right. So you overgive. You overexplain. You overinvest. You keep chasing closure, you keep chasing validation, and every time they disappoint you again, you feel shocked again. Acceptance ends that cycle. It's you saying, I see you, I'm not angry that you are who you are, but I'm going to respond accordingly. That response might be love from a distance, it might be limited access. It might be stronger boundaries, it might be a calm goodbye, it might be staying but no longer expecting, but it will be chosen, and choice is what creates calm. Let's make it personal. If there's someone in your life who keeps triggering you, ask yourself, am I losing my calm because of what they do, or because of what I keep expecting them to stop doing? That question can sting, but it gives you power, because if the real problem is your expectation, you can change it today, not by becoming cynical, by becoming realistic. And realism is peace. So here's a simple practice for today. Think of one person who regularly frustrates you. In your mind, complete this sentence. This person is currently the type of person who, and be honest. Then complete this sentence. So, the wise way for me to interact with them is, that second sentence is where your calm returns. Because when you stop demanding that people become different, you stop bleeding emotional energy. And here's the question to sit with before we move on. Who are you expecting to change right now? And what would happen if you accepted who they are today and adjusted your boundaries accordingly? 14. Focus on inner peace, not external approval. A lot of people don't realize they're not actually chasing success. They're chasing permission. Permission to feel worthy. Permission to feel seen. Permission to feel safe. Permission to relax. And they try to get that permission from the outside. Likes, respect, attention, praise, validation, being understood, being admired. That chase is exhausting. And it's one of the fastest ways to lose your calm. Because when your peace depends on external approval, you become emotionally dependent on things you cannot control. You start living like your nervous system is a voting machine. Every interaction is a poll. Every silence feels like rejection. Every criticism feels like collapse. And your mood rises and falls based on how other people respond to you. Stoicism says, that's not freedom, that's slavery. Epictetus was very direct about this. If you want to be free, don't place your good in what belongs to others, meaning don't place your happiness in other people's opinions, because if your happiness lives in their minds, they own you. Marcus Aurelius, K. kept reminding himself that fame is noise, applause is temporary, and public opinion is unstable. People praise you today and forget you tomorrow. They hate you today and praise you tomorrow. So if you make that your foundation, you will always be shaky. You will always need more approval to feel okay. And this is why focusing on inner peace is such a powerful principle. Inner peace is not a gift the world gives you. It's a standard you build inside yourself. It's the quiet confidence that you are living correctly, regardless of who notices. That confidence comes from character. Seneca wrote about how the wise person is satisfied with themselves, not arrogant, satisfied, because they are aligned with virtue. They are living with intention. They're not performing a life, they're building a life. Now here's the modern version of this principle. Stop living for the algorithm of people's opinions. People have an invisible algorithm in their heads. They reward certain behaviors, punish others, change their standards, project their insecurities, and call it truth. If you keep adjusting yourself to fit that algorithm, you'll never find calm, because the algorithm never stops changing. Stoicism is you stepping out of that system. It's you saying, "My job is to be good. My job is to be disciplined. My job is to be honest. My job is to treat people with respect and set boundaries where needed. My job is to do what's right, even if nobody claps." That's inner peace. And it's stronger than approval, because it stays with you in every room. Let's make it practical. When someone disapproves of you, you have two options. Option one is to chase approval. Explain yourself. Prove yourself. Adjust your behavior to win them back. That might work temporarily, but you'll lose something, your center. And once you lose your center, the next person will take it too. Option two is to check your conscience. Ask, "Did I act with integrity?" If yes, you let their disapproval pass through like wind. If no, you correct yourself quietly. Either way, you don't panic. You don't beg. You don't perform. You stay steady. That steadiness is rare, and that's why it's powerful. The need for approval also shows up in subtle ways: over-explaining, apologizing when you didn't do wrong, trying to be liked by everyone, avoiding hard conversations, staying silent when you should speak, speaking when you should stay silent. These are all ways the ego tries to secure approval to feel safe. But the Stoics would ask you, is approval worth the cost of your peace? Because the cost is always paid internally. So here's a practice for today that can change your life if you actually do it. Before you speak or act in a situation where you want approval, pause and ask, "Am I doing this to be respected or to be liked?" Respect is earned through character. Liking is often earned through performance. If you choose character, you might not be liked by everyone, but you'll be calm. If you choose performance, you might be liked, but your peace will be fragile. Inner peace is the reward for living in alignment. And the strange thing is, once you stop chasing approval, you often earn more respect. Not because you tried to, but because calm self-respect is magnetic. People can feel it. They know you're not desperate. They know you're not begging for acceptance. So here's the question to sit with before we move on. Where are you still seeking external approval? And what would happen if you chose inner peace over being liked, starting today? 15. Remain steady, regardless of circumstances. This is the final test of calm. Not whether you can stay peaceful when life is smooth, but whether you can stay steady when life is loud. Because circumstances are always moving. People change their moods, plans break, money goes up and down, health fluctuates. A day starts well and ends badly. Someone praises you, then someone criticizes you. If your inner state rises and falls with all of that, you'll spend your life on an emotional roller coaster, always reacting, always recovering, always trying to get back to normal. Stoicism aims for something rarer: steadiness, not numbness, not pretending. Steadiness. Marcus Aurelius described it like holding your ground, like being a cliff while waves crash. The waves are real, the water hits hard, but the cliff doesn't move. And the cliff doesn't move, not because it's stubborn, but because it's rooted. That's what the steady mind is, rooted. Rooted in values, rooted in reason, rooted in the understanding that life is unstable, so your inner world must be stable. Epictetus would say that freedom is the ability to keep your will in harmony with reality, meaning you don't demand that the world be different for you to be okay. You demand that your character stays strong no matter what the world does. That's the deepest form of calm, when the outside can change without changing who you are. Now, this principle sounds big, but it's built in small moments. It's built when your plan gets interrupted and you don't throw a tantrum. It's built when someone provokes you and you choose dignity. It's built when you're tired and you still do the right thing. It's built when you're successful and you don't become arrogant. It's built when you fail and you don't become bitter. Steadiness is character under pressure. Seneca wrote about fortune like it's a wild animal. It can be kind one day and cruel the next. And if you build your peace on fortune, on outcomes, you will always be vulnerable. But if you build your peace on virtue, fortune can't touch it. You might lose things, you might suffer, but you won't be spiritually thrown around. That's why Stoicism is not just self-help, it's inner architecture. Now, there's a simple reason people struggle with steadiness. They wait for circumstances to improve before they act wisely. They say, once things calm down, I'll be calm. But things don't calm down, life keeps moving. So steadiness is you refusing to postpone your peace. You train calm now, in the middle of the noise. And the way you train it is by returning to the same core principles we've been building in this episode. Control what you can, release what you can't. Pause before reacting, detach from ego, accept reality, and choose reason. This final principle is basically all of them combined into a lifestyle, because steadiness is not one decision. It's a repeated decision. It's you choosing again and again not to be pulled. And one of the most powerful parts of this is what it does socially. When you remain steady, you become difficult to manipulate. Emotional people can't control you with drama. Narcissistic people can't control you with guilt. Insecure people can't control you with disrespect. The world can still test you, but it can't own you. That's the goal. So let's make it practical with one simple mental rule. Don't let the external world set your internal pace. The world will always try. It will rush you, provoke you, distract you, overwhelm you, tempt you. Your job is to keep your pace calm. Even if you're moving fast, your pace can be calm. Even if you're under pressure, your pace can be calm. Even if you're being misunderstood, your pace can be calm. That's what steadiness looks like in real time. And here's a practice to carry forward after this episode ends. At the start of the day, choose one word. Steady. Not as a mantra you repeat like a robot, just as a quiet intention. Then throughout the day, whenever you feel yourself getting pulled, return to it. Steady. It's a reminder of who you want to be in that moment. Because the calm person is not the one with no problems. It's the one who refuses to become their problems. Here's the final question to sit with. What circumstance has been shaking you lately? And what would it look like today to remain steady inside it anyway? If there's one honest takeaway from everything we just walked through, it's this. Calm isn't something you have. It's something you practice until it becomes who you are. Because life won't stop testing you. People won't stop having moods. Plans won't stop changing. The world won't suddenly become gentle just because you decided to be peaceful. So the Stoic path is simple and it's demanding in the best way. You stop waiting for calm to arrive from the outside and you start building it from the inside. You build it every time you return to what you can control. You build it every time you refuse to attach your emotions to a random event. You build it every time you correct your inner dialogue instead of obeying it. You build it every time you accept reality, choose reason, and pause before you speak. You build it every time you stop taking things personally, stop chasing approval, and let people be who they are without letting them disturb who you are. And the beautiful part is that this kind of calm doesn't make you smaller. It makes you stronger. It makes you clearer. It makes you harder to manipulate and easier to respect. Because the person who can stay steady in chaos is rare, and the world can feel that steadiness. So here's your quiet challenge for today. Pick one moment that usually steals your calm, one trigger, one situation, one type of person, and decide in advance how you will respond next time. Not with anger, not with drama, with dignity, with control, with self-respect. 1% today. The next time life pulls on you, don't rush to react. Pause long enough to choose the version of you that you actually want to become. And maybe that's the whole Stoic promise in one line. The world can be loud, but you don't have to be.